the feeling is the remote. I'm Laurel Bowman. The thousands of opposition supporters marched through the Belarusian capital of Minsk Sunday, calling for an end to strongman Alexander Lukashenko's rule. This while heavily armed police and troops blocked streets and detained demonstrators. Protesters have now entered a third week since the disputed presidential election on August 9th, in which Lukashenko claimed victory, while opposition rivals Svetlana Tsikhanouskaya said she was the true winner. Demonstrations of late are the largest the country has seen since independence from the USSR. Sunday's rally fell on Lukashenko's 66th birthday. He spoke to Russian President Vladimir Putin shortly before the protests began, with the Kremlin leader wishing him a happy birthday. The latest rally came amid a harsh crackdown on media freedoms. On Saturday, the Belarusian Foreign Ministry withdrew accreditation for numerous journalists working for international media, including AFP, the BBC, and Radio Liberty, Radio Free Europe, with a government official citing counterterrorism concerns. Sudan's main rebel alliance has agreed on a peace deal with the government aimed at ending 17 years of conflict, official news agency SUNA said Sunday. The Sudan Revolutionary Front, or SRF, inked a peace deal with the government late Saturday. The SRF is an alliance of rebel groups from the western region of Darfur and the southern states of South Kordofan and Blue Nile. A formal signing ceremony is planned for Monday in Juba, the capital of neighboring South Sudan, which has hosted the long-running talks since late 2019. The final agreement covers issues such as security, land ownership, and the return of people who fled their homes due to war. It also provides for the dismantling of rebel forces and the integration of them into the national army. This is VOA News. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad issued a decree Sunday appointing a new cabinet without changing the heads of so-called sovereign portfolios. The decree, published on the presidency's social media channels, keeps the heads of the foreign affairs, defense, interior, economy, and information ministries in their posts, but changes those in charge of 12 other cabinet portfolios, including the ministries of finance, energy, and public health. The 29-minister government, which includes three female ministers, is the fifth to be formed since the outbreak of Syria's civil war in 2011. It came as Syria grapples with a grinding economic crisis, a spiraling coronavirus outbreak, and continued violence in the country's north. A new wave of U.S. sanctions against Syria that came into effect in June have sparked fears of deeper economic turmoil. More than 843,000 people have died of COVID-19 globally and with no vaccine or effective treatment yet available. Despite these numbers, there has been a steady opposition to lockdowns and social distancing measures in many parts of the world, often because of their harsh economic costs. But resistance has also come from the extreme right and left of the political spectrum, as well as from conspiracy theorists and anti-vaccine campaigners. In Berlin this weekend, thousands gathered to march against coronavirus restrictions, but police later stopped the rally because many were not respecting social distancing measures. Protesters waved German flags and shouted slogans against Chancellor Angela Merkel, slogans often used by the far-right Alternative for Germany party. Many carried placards promoting debunked conspiracy theories about vaccines, face masks, and even 5G communications. Similar protests were held in London and Zurich, where some carried signs supporting a far-right movement which promotes theories about Satan worshiping and deep state plots. And though the Tour de France set off from the French Riviera on Saturday, this in France, it starts 2 months later than planned, and with the French sport minister not ruling out the cancellation of the event because of the coronavirus. Under the Tour rules, a team with two positive tests in its entourage would be expelled. A virus testing cell will travel with the teams throughout the race. And New York's Metropolitan Museum of Art reopened its doors to the public after a six-month closure as visitors clapped and lined up for tickets. And soccer legend Lionel Messi has reportedly failed to show up for a coronavirus test at Barcelona's training ground, casting more doubt on his future at the La Liga powerhouse. This is VOA News via remote. I'm Laurel Bowman in Washington.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
We are depending on the people's power to make sure that the Electoral Commission announces the real winners of this election, from presidential candidates, members of parliament, and local councillors.
Tanzanian political parties officially launch their campaigns ahead of the upcoming October polls.
I strongly believe that when they organize this meeting, Malians will find a resolution between them. And we hope that ECOWAS will accept what will be decided by Malians and put end to their sanctions.
The Malian military junta calls for a meeting with civil society and opposition political parties.
For some cases, it has almost seemed that there is some invisible influence or invisible hand that is influencing maybe the way that they do things. And we think that that is a big problem that we need to start sorting out, even as a country.
And a Zambian anti-corruption campaigner wants President Edgar Lungu to do more to fight graft. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Tanzania's main opposition party, Chadema, plans to take its campaign to Arusha Monday. This after what officials say was a successful three-day effort over the weekend. The party officially launched its manifesto in the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam, Friday, ahead of the upcoming October elections. The ruling party, the Chama Chama Pinduzi, or CCM, launched its campaign in the capital, Dodoma, Saturday. The opposition Civic United Front, or CUF, plans to start its campaign on September 3, while ACT Wazalendo has yet to determine the day to begin its campaign. John Rema is Chadema's Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs and Protocols. He tells me that Tanzanians are determined to change the government, adding that his party will not be distracted by attempts to rig the electoral process.
Yes, we started a campaign Friday in Dar es Salaam. The rallies were very successful. Yesterday and today we had another big rally. Our presidential candidate, Honorable Tundu Lissu, urged the National Electoral Commission to make sure that our candidates for parliamentary and the local councillors who have been removed from the list by objections from the ruling party and objections from the returning officers, they should be returned back to the electoral process unconditionally. And we urge the National Electoral Commission to make sure that they do that so that they can safeguard the peace and security of this country, because up to yesterday, out of 264 constituencies in the country, 57 constituencies, our candidates have been removed unreasonably by the National Electoral Commission officers. And out of 3,956 wards or local council members, 1,026 till yesterday, they have been removed from contesting.
Since you have contacted the Electoral Commission to rectify some of these challenges and the disqualification of your members to challenge CCM candidate, what has been the response? And are you confident that those candidates of yours will qualify to participate in this upcoming elections?
We have started the appealing processes to the National Electoral Commission, and up to the afternoon before I started the rally, 11 members of parliament have been returned back, only 11 out of 57. So we are waiting to see if the National Electoral Commission will continue returning them back, or they will sustain what have been done by their officers in the lower level. But until afternoon, 11 of them, they have been returned back as contestants, so they can challenge the ruling party members. And if you go to the court, if you have been removed, your case will be squashed out, because you'll be asked that you are not a candidate, so you have no merit to stand for that because you are not a candidate. So that's a biggest challenge, because they can just disqualify you and you have nowhere to go
How has the response been so far since you began your campaign ahead of the elections, particularly in the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam, this weekend?
The response has been very positive since yesterday and today. The people are excited. A lot of people in our rallies, a thousand of people are marching up to our rallies. And today we have officially launched our manifesto for this year's election. And among the things in our manifesto is that we need freedom. That is a key message to our people, because we've been for the last 5 years under suppression by the ruling regime. So even people, they need back there to restore their freedom, because people are not free in this country. So our key message is freedom, freedom, freedom. And people are receiving that with a very positive way, because themselves, they need that freedom, because they've been without freedom for quite some time.
Do you think the manifesto that you have launched will meet the aspirations of the people of Tanzania, such that you would have a chance of defeating incumbent President John Magufuli in the presidential poll?
Chance of defeating President Magufuli is there, but the challenge is, if the Electoral Commission will run a free and fair election, President Magufuli, we will defeat him. But even if they will run an election which is not free and fair, we are depending on the people's power to make sure that the Electoral Commission announces the real winners of this election, from presidential candidates, members of parliament, and the local councillors.
Well, Mr. Mrema, officials of the Electoral Commission are saying that they will continue meeting all political parties, including the opposition and civil society organizations, to address your concerns as part of the process to ensure credibility and transparency of the elections. Are you not satisfied with this?
The issue is not to be satisfied. The issue is that they can promise that we are going to meet with you, but when? Because our electoral laws have a deadline of submitting appeals, and the Electoral Commission, they are supposed to respond on time. Actually, tomorrow is the last time the Electoral Commission, they should respond to the appeals from our side. So if they'll meet us next week, nothing can happen, because they'll tell you that we are time bound. We can do nothing because the laws doesn't allow us to extend even an hour to deal with your concern.
John Mrema is Chadema's Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs and Protocols. He spoke with me from the Tanzanian commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. The National Committee for the People's Salvation, the Mali military junta, has reportedly called for a meeting with civil society and opposition groups. An earlier meeting scheduled for Saturday was postponed following concerns by a section of the opposition coalition M5RFP. Local media reports say the junta will discuss the next steps forward after releasing former President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita and the former Prime Minister Boubou Cisse. This as regional leaders from the Economic Community of West African State reach an agreement for a transitional process. Mohamed Sahalaha is a Malian independent journalist based in the capital, Bamako. He tells me that a majority of Malians support the military junta, but he adds that they don't support conditions outlined by the regional leaders about how the country is to be administered.
Malian people are not angry with ECOWAS decision, because they think that ECOWAS supports a regime, not Malian people. And Malian call for ECOWAS of people, not ECOWAS of regime. It's up to Malian to decide what kind of transition they want, or also to design who will be a civilian or a military who will lead the transition. So Malian wants ECOWAS to support Mali instead of putting sanction on Mali. That's how Malian react to the decision of ECOWAS.
Has the military junta that toppled President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita responded to this information coming from ECOWAS that they should hand over power within 12 months?
The military junta did not react directly, but they made efforts. The effort they made are, example, the release of Ibrahim Boubacar Keita, which was asked by ECOWAS, and also ECOWAS show like availability to discuss and to come to a point. But in the other part, things are getting difficult. And so the junta invited all Malian civilian society, political part, for a meeting. Unfortunately, the meeting has been postponed. It was supposed to happen today, but it has been postponed because some group of people, especially the M5 RFP, wasn't happy because their name wasn't mentioned in the invitation document. But they invite everybody to come to discuss about the fate of Mali. So I think that in the next coming day, this meeting will be held, and we will get a clear response to ECOWAS, and that response will be decided inclusively by all Malian people.
Mohamed, a lot of opposition supporters praise the efforts of the military when they forced Ibrahim Boubacar Keita to resign. Do Malians still support the military despite pressure coming from ECOWAS?
Obviously, Malians support the military junta. Why? Because the military junta have completed a long fight of the opposition who were protesting, claiming the resignation of the president, Ibrahim Boubacar Keita. It's true that Malians need change. It's true that Malians want to fight against corruption. They want to end bad governance. And most of Malian people believe that it's only a military who should lead the transition for a radical change in Mali, because we have a lot of things to change in Mali, and people don't believe anymore to politician or civilian power.
When the postponed talks of all opposition political parties, civil society groups, and the military junta meet in the coming days, do you anticipate that there will be a resolution of a transitional period for elections to be organized?
I'm sure that we will get a resolution, because the military who are leading now, the junta, they are not rude. They are open. They are open. And I believe to their leadership, because they receive everybody and they talk to them. They are looking for a solution. They are not looking for problems, because they come to resolve Malian problems. They don't want to add problems to problems. That's why they invite Malian whole people for a discussion. When some were not happy, so they postponed it so that they reorganize it. So I strongly believe that when they organize this meeting, Malian will find a resolution between them. And we hope that ECOWAS will accept what will be decided by Malian and put end to their sanctions.
Mohamed Sahlaha is a Malian independent journalist. He spoke with me from the capital, Bamako. South Africans are now looking up to the National Executive Committee of the Governing African National Congress, or ANC, to come up with measures to tackle corruption, according to Dr. Colette Schulze-Hesenberg, senior political science lecturer at the University of Stellenbosch. Her remark comes after South African President Cyril Ramaphosa called on members of the ANC to stop engaging in acts of corruption. But in response to his letter, former President Jacob Zuma described Mr. Ramaphosa's letter as a publicity stunt aimed at saving himself from accusations of corruption. The president had warned of consequences for those alleged to have stolen COVID-19 relief funds. He has since signed a proclamation for the Special Investigative Unit to launch an inquiry into all acts of corruption across the country. Dr. Colette Schulze-Hesenberg tells me that the president's letter was strategic and aimed at ensuring the ANC tackles corruption ahead of next year's election.
Ramaphosa understands that with a large local election coming next year, he really has to be seen as the leader of the party and certainly the president of the country to be dealing directly with the scourge of corruption. And that is really the context in which he wrote this letter. This letter was primarily aimed at his own party, members within his party, pointing to the fact, in fact, as far as the South African public is concerned, the ANC are the problem. So this is a call to the ANC to basically understand that the movement needs to deal with the pandemic of corruption and not necessarily the investigating authorities and so on, prosecutorial authorities. So to see a response from former President Jacob Zuma really has to be seen in that light. And this is Zuma positioning himself. The letter suggests that corruption is a problem and it should be dealt with, but his attack is really a sort of a personal attack on Ramaphosa and how Ramaphosa interprets corruption within the ANC.
He described Ramaphosa's letter as a publicity stunt and a move to save his own skin regarding allegations of corruption against himself. What do you make of it? Do you think former President Zuma is justified in his criticism?
Well, not at all. It's unjustified that Zuma can basically turn around and say to Ramaphosa that this is opportunistic, it's a stunt. I think what Ramaphosa has cleverly done is he put the gauntlet straight to the ANC. The ANC now have to respond. And it's a challenge to the ANC to tackle this head on. The ANC, former presidents and so on, are not on board in terms of tackling it. That is going to bring to the fore these fractures and these splits within the movement that I've been talking about. So I think the letter is a clever tactic to bring this conversation right into the public space by Ramaphosa. And I think it's disingenuous of Zuma to suggest that it's a publicity stunt. So it's going to be interesting to see how the ANC as a whole, how the executive committee as a whole deals with this issue and how they're going to deal with individual cases that are particularly have high public profiles at the moment.
Some people are saying that the Zuma letter, as well as that of President Ramaphosa, basically paves the way for opposition parties to take advantage that the ruling party, the ANC party, is corrupt. Do you see this happening?
Well, the opposition have been able to take advantage of corruption allegations for at least the past 3 elections. The fact that the opposition haven't been able to capitalize on poor governance by the ANC and very specific corruption allegations says more about the opposition in this country than it does the ANC. The fact that the opposition is still relatively weak in comparison to the ANC, and it, for whatever reason, and that's certainly, you know, a discussion for another day, unable to completely capitalize on it.
Do you think the ANC executive or the ANC as a party would act on the letter Cyril Ramaphosa wrote to them in order to deal with the issues of corruption?
Yeah, that is, I think, the million-dollar question for South Africans at the moment. We are definitely keeping our eye closely on what the National Executive Committee of the governing party will do about this. I think people are hoping for 2 outcomes. The one is that the party itself takes a firm stand and recalls a number of individuals who have been implicated and, in fact, have criminal charges pending. And those people still find themselves in public official positions. We want the political party to take a stand on those matters and recall those individuals immediately out of public life until their criminal proceedings are finalized and concluded. On the other hand, we hope for a second outcome, which is a far more speedy response by our investigating and prosecutorial authorities in South Africa. We've had prosecutions at a glacial pace in this country for a number of reasons. I think there is political will to push through with this now from Ramaphosa, and we do have a great deal of energy has gone into rebuilding the hawks and so forth in the organization tasked with prosecuting corruption issues. And so I think we hope for those 2 outcomes. Firstly, the party taking a firm stand against corruption and sending out a very clear message to its own members that it will simply not be tolerated any longer. But secondly, we need to see some prosecutions in South Africa because there is an increasing sense that corruption goes unpunished.
Dr. Colette Schulze-Hesenberg is a senior political science lecturer at the University of Stellenbosch. She spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa.
The executive director of Transparency International Zambia says President Edgar Lungu's statement against the Anti-Corruption Commission is undermining efforts to combat corruption in the Southern African country. Maurice Nyambi says the government appears to pay lip service in the fight against the scourge, but supporters of the president say he continues to demonstrate commitment in the fight against corruption. They cited the prosecution and subsequent acquittal of Health Minister Dr. Chilufya Chitalu over allegations of corruption. This after the president called on the Anti-Corruption Commission to investigate and prosecute public officials engaged in graft. The Times of Zambia, a state-run newspaper, recently quoted the president as saying the anti-graft agency is failing to go after corrupt public officials and is only concentrating on a plan to see him lose power. Maurice Nyambi, the executive director of Transparency International Zambia, tells me the president and his government have not done enough to effectively combat corruption.
It is a statement that we received really with a shock and dismay. I think what this statement does is that it undermines the work of the ACC, but also beyond that, it places a lot of doubt, even within the public, in terms of the confidence that the public has in the ACC. The ACC is currently facing a lot of challenges, one of which is this public perception that it has to grapple with. There's a perception out there in the public that the ACC does not have the independence, does not have the muscle to be able to prosecute high-profile cases that have to do with corruption. And so statements such as the one that the president made really do not help to improve that public perception that the ACC is grappling with. So it's a statement really that shocked us to our core, and it's really, really unfortunate.
But Maurice, would you say that the president, and for that matter, his government, have been able to give the Anti-Corruption Commission the commitment and the political backing for them to go after those who are alleged to have committed financial malfeasance in Zambia?
It's a multi-dollar question in many ways, but I think that a lot of what we have seen from the president and generally from his government is that there has been a lot of rhetorical commitment when it comes to the fight against corruption. But then in terms of the actions that they actually do, they don't speak to what is coming in terms of the verbal commitment. And so for us, this is something that we have raised repeatedly, that it is not just about saying that you are interested in fighting corruption, but it's about being able to give even entities such as the ACC the leeway and the space to be able to actually do their constitutionally mandated role. And we don't think that that has happened to as a great an extent as it should.
The last time Voice of America spoke with President Lungu, he said he is committed to fight corruption in Zambia. Some of his supporters are also saying that his recent statement, including the one attributed to him yesterday, calling on the Anti-Corruption Commission to look into how contracts are awarded, to probe, to investigate, isn't this part of the commitment to fight corruption in Zambia?
What we would like to see is that we would like to see real action that is taken. Well, let me give you an example, Peter. When one of his ministers was being investigated for corruption, what we were calling upon, and a lot of other stakeholders joined us in calling on the president to put that minister aside, because he had an active court case actually in court. And so what we were saying is that in order to give precedence and to give integrity to the whole process of the investigation, he needed to put the minister aside, either on suspension, so that he could concentrate fully on the court case. And if, in the event that the minister is found innocent, then he would be brought back. But then the statement that we got in response to that, I think, is something that worried us. Because also, one of the things that we have raised is that there has not been a consistency in terms of how the president approaches corruption. Because for some ministers in the past that have faced allegations of corruption, he has actually fired them on the spot. I have an example of the former Community Development Minister, Honorable Emerine Kabanshi, who was fired on the basis of allegations. And yet for other ministers, he says no presumption of innocence until proven guilty. So it's this inconsistent approach towards the fight of corruption that gives us doubt as to whether there really is a commitment in that sense.
Has Transparency International Zambia engaged with the Anti-Corruption Commission to ascertain how you could cooperate or help in the fight against corruption in Zambia?
As a matter of fact, we do collaborate with the ACC on a number of projects, one of which is a study that we do every 2 years called the Zambia Bribe Payers Index. But beyond that, I think it's quite clear that the ACC is facing a lot of challenges, some of which we are privy to. And I think some of these challenges have to do with the inadequate funding, for example, that they receive for them to be able to fully prosecute cases. And I think the fact that their funding comes through central government also doesn't help in terms of even the public perception when it comes to the independence of the ACC itself. But also, I think one of the things that we have seen with the ACC is that for some cases, it has almost seemed that there is some invisible influence or invisible hand that is influencing maybe the way that they do things. And we think that that is a big problem that we need to start sorting out, even as a country.
Maurice Nyambi is the Executive Director of Transparency International Zambia. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Impuga and music from our African collection. But first, Malawi has announced plans for a phased reopening of schools beginning on September 7 as the rate of confirmed cases of COVID-19 has dropped. But health officials warn the lower infection rates are not because the pandemic is waning, but because of a decrease in testing rates due to a shortage of testing kits. For VOA, Lamek Masina reports from the Malawian commercial capital, Blantyre.
Malawi's Education Minister Agnes Nyalonje told a press conference Thursday the reopening of schools aims to reduce the economic and social impact of coronavirus on the country.
COVID-19 has put education in Malawi and the world over in disarray, as we all know. We have, however, realized that there's need to continue educating and preparing our human resources if the country is to develop.
She said the classes resuming on September 7 are only for those sitting for final examinations and fourth-year college students, while classes for younger students will begin in October. Nyalonje said there are strict guidelines for reopening.
Some of the issues contained in the guidelines include the following. Number one, disinfecting schools following Centers for Disease Control CDC guidelines in close collaboration with district councils. Number two, all schools are to ensure that hand washing facilities are available and that hand washing is enforced.
The Presidential Task Force on COVID-19 also said it has recommended the opening of schools because Malawi has confirmed a few coronavirus cases in recent weeks. From a peak of 100 cases per day last month, Malawi has for the past 3 weeks confirmed as few as 5 cases per day. George Jobe is the executive director for Malawi Health Equity Network. He tells VOA that the drop in confirmed cases is not a true reflection of the situation on the ground.
Picture on the ground, considering that Malawi is in low supply of testing kits, and as such, not everyone is tested. We acknowledge that Malawi is not doing mass testing.
Malawi's government recently announced it will only be testing those showing symptoms because of a shortage of COVID-19 testing kits. Bete Wisik Kalitera, a specialist in special and inclusive education, has criticized the government plans to give final examinations in 3 weeks. She said this will disadvantage learners with disabilities who did not have access to lessons when the schools closed.
The content that was shared was not in braille format to learners who are blind, to give them a chance like any other learner to study while at home. So mostly they were just sitting idle without doing anything. For learners who are deaf, it's the same thing. They never had anything.
Still, the education ministry says all teachers are required to start teaching from where they stopped when schools were closed on March 23. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
new report from the United Nations Children's Fund, or UNICEF, says at least a third of the world's children, 463 million, were unable to access remote learning when COVID-19 shuttered their schools as countries grapple with their back-to-school plans. For VOA, Mavis Ochery reports from the Ghanaian Upper West Regional Capital, Accra.
UNICEF's report outlines the limitations of remote learning and exposes deep inequalities in access. The report uses data from 100 countries on the availability of home-based technology and tools needed for remote learning. That includes access to television, radio, and internet, and the availability of curriculum delivered across these platforms. James Elder, UNICEF spokesperson for Eastern and Southern Africa, says this latest report should be an alarm bell for governments, parents, and teacher associations the world over. He says there has never been a bigger educational crisis in the world before, and says pragmatic steps must be taken to address the situation.
The sheer number of children whose education was completely disrupted for months on end is a global education emergency, and the repercussions could be felt in economies and societies for decades to come.
Elder says Eastern and Southern Africa have the biggest number of percentage of children unable to access remote learning, with nearly half of school-age children, about 67 million, unable to access remote learning in the region. About 54 million children in Western and Central Africa were unable to access remote learning, or about 48%. By comparison, the UNICEF report shows that in East Asia and the Pacific, 20% or 8 million children had no access. Elder says that means government, teacher unions, and other stakeholders must come together to find ways to get these children safely back to school. He says in Eastern and Southern Africa, most of the children who are not in school are out and about in their villages and communities, so they are not protected from the spread of COVID-19. Elder says children are not the main drivers of the pandemic across countries, noting that figures show in Africa, children between 5 and 18 years old account for 2.5% of all confirmed cases.
This very, very limited role children have in spreading the virus. So we acknowledge that safe school reopening will not be easy. There will be cases of COVID-19 reported in schools. This is not going to be a practice in perfection, but it can be done, and it must be done with community commitment, government leadership, and investment into key areas like water and hygiene.
Elder says there is also more to be done to enable school children to access remote learning. In Eastern and Southern Africa, UNICEF has created what it calls Internet with Good Tens, a website that can be accessed on mobile phones to enable children access what they need to be learning. He says UNICEF worked with telecommunication providers to make that site free so that people do not need to buy data to access it. UNICEF also is providing educational content on radio and television for children. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Ochery in Ghana.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Mpuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. The Wanda Diamond League has announced further changes to its 2020 calendar with the postponement of a second Chinese meeting until 2021. Originally scheduled for October 17th, the meeting would have joined Shanghai to become one of two Chinese meetings on the Wanda Diamond League circuit. The new meeting will now be launched in 2021, when the Wanda Diamond League hopes to return to a full calendar of 15 meetings. The new host city, as well as further details about the meeting, will be revealed in due course, according to the organizers. The 2020 Wanda Diamond League season will now end in Doha on September 25th.
In African football, the long-awaited Tunis derby between rivals Club Africain and Esperance ended in a barren draw on Wednesday in Tunis. Esperance has the upper hand with 53 wins, 32 victories for Club Africain and 47 draws. A win for Esperance would have earned them the Tunisian league crown with 4 matches to spare. They lead the table with 54 points, 11 more than their closest rivals, CS Sfaxien. The host Club Africain remained in 5th position, 17 points shy of the leaders. In South Africa, Mamelodi Sundowns gave themselves a big shot at winning a third South African league title when they held off a Kaizer Chiefs onslaught to win 1-0 on Thursday. Gaston Serimo scored the only goal of the match from an outrageous Thambo Zwane assist to take Sundowns to 53 points, equal on points to a Chiefs side that had led the league for close to a year. This means Sundowns and Chiefs are now equal on points, with Sundowns trailing Amakosi on goal difference. With 3 matches to go for each, this is likely to be a photo finish to the season. Still in South Africa, the nation's cricket governing body has sacked its chief executive, Thabang Manru, for what it says were acts of serious misconduct. Cricket South Africa says the decision was based on legal advice after an independent investigation. Maru was initially suspended in December over the allegations. In a statement, Cricket South Africa said Maru had sufficient opportunity to make representations to the association board, which he failed and or refused to utilize. Acting Chief Executive Kugandri Govender is to continue in the role until a permanent replacement is appointed. And that's about it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports.
And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
You got the keys to my Jeep. This is the sun, I'm Rambo, in stick shift. Ignition, baby, full speed. Skid. Accelerator, speedometer. Kuserereka, speedometer. Accelerator, speedometer. Kuserereka.
Busy, blase. Unajiduna uko hungry. Chali mdogo na uko thirsty. Ukisteki nda kuroga, you be my honey. You say you want me, oh, you're so funny. Cause I've heard it all before.
I'm different.
I've heard it all before. Baby,
different.
This, baby, that.
Baby, you got the keys to my Jeep. Usi stuke sana mrembo, hini stick shift. Ignition, baby, full speed. Ski, accelerator, speedometer, kuserereka, speedometer, accelerator, speedometer, kuserereka, speedometer.
Kakuku ni ndege,
Basi
samaki ni meli,
okay.
Kangoma ni genge,
Kwa
mikrofoni mini mkali,
yeah.
Utanipata na maboys nikikata maji, kwa dunda sipendi vita tona watiaji, nikiserereka. Napenda ndogo hiyo, nandimu, na jagia maji moto.
You got the keys to my Jeep. Usistuke sana mrembo, hii ni stick shift. Ignition, baby, full speed. Ski. Accelerator, speedometer, kuserereka. Speedometer, accelerator, speedometer, kuserereka.
Kawewe ni gari, basi mimi ni driver. Kawewe ni nduthi, basi mimi ni rider. Kawe ni bunduki, basi mimi ni sniper. Kama wewe kitanda, basi mimi pajama.
Sexy body, kala kabima. Leme kutu chundi basa, wante bampa to bampa. Umebeba, utadhani ni trailer. Kama wewe ni kecha, basi mimi ni neighbor.
Beep, you got the keys to my Jeep. Usistuke sana mrembo, hii ni stick shift. Ignition, baby, full speed. Ski, accelerator, speedometer, kuserereka. Speedometer, accelerator, speedometer, kuserereka.
meni na sirabwe ana waste time aparare kama mawe eh atrela loda trela loda gals in the house porombo sa we don't do sa easy keep bounce easy trousers in a shuka style ya ma dancer mina wa angusha to design ya mamba accelerator speedometer kusereka speedometer accelerator speedometer kusereka speedometer deep deep you got the keys to my jeep usistuke sana mrembo hii ni stick shift ignition baby full speed skid
Zawadi was a maradi Uzuli ndo lako taji na maitaji Mina kipaji cho maridadi Achana no baba ishaji wanajinadi Tafata dini na hitikadi Ili mradi nkizi maitaji Tuzidi kumomba mungu yendo mpaji Kuzalua mwanaume mateso Mapenzi bila pesa viche kesho Achani limeleo ili tuvune kesho Tupate wala keo na tupunguze mazito Mapenzi Ni mfano wa bahari Tuichunze yetu siri Wapita njio si kariri Siwezi Kuamua kwenda mbali Kati unaipenda na kunjali Tuombe mungu na tuswali
Mama Khadija Omar Kopa. Ila mina kota mani Neko pereke nyumbani Darling, darling
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoyed the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor Shaka Sale, Reporter Douglas Mpuga, and Producer Saida Hamdoun, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, the one who enters a forest does not listen to the breaking of the twigs in the brush. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.